This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to When in Romance, where we get to talk about all kinds of romance things related to books, not the other stuff. I am Jess.
And I am Trisha.
And we are recording on Thursday, January 18th, 2024. Yeah. I can do it in speech, but not yet in writing.
One thing at a time. You're doing your best. How are you, Jess?
I am doing all right. I am enjoying this not cold that's weirdly happening in Arizona right now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really say much for what's going to happen in future months when we hit like 170. But right now, sure. It's nice to go outside. How are you?
I'm okay. I did confess to Jess before we started recording, I'm a little bit of a mess because I traveled cross country earlier this week, got stuck on a tarmac for 3 hours, and I was like, oh, this was the worst. Oh, well, it'll be fine.
Oh, no.
And now my trip home has gone from being a 9-hour trip to being, at best, a 20-hour trip.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Also, to be clear, I'm not flying across the world. I'm flying across the country. So I hope that by the time you all are hearing this, it will be too late for your recommendations. But Jess, as we are going through this episode, if any of the books you talk about are good airplane books or airport books, I will be spending 10 hours in each tomorrow. So again, if everything goes well, that's the best case scenario. So we will see how it all shakes out. Keep your fingers crossed.
Oh, gosh.
But yeah, so if anything jumps out at you that you're talking about, that you're like, oh, you know what? This would be a great book to read while on a 7-hour layover. Please mention it. Thank you. And again, God willing, 4 days from now when you're all listening to this, I will be safely home. But if not, I will put a call out into the world for airport books. We'll see.
Oh, man.
And this is the best and worst part is that the book that you have been reading is a book that you can't even recommend to me as an airport book.
Nope. No.
I'm delighted that you read, like, I'm 90% thrilled that you have read this. I'm going to let you talk about it in a second, but I'm 10% bummed that I'm like, oh, come on. For the first time in like a year, I can't even use your currently reading recommendation.
I'm sorry. You could read it again.
That is true. That is true. Why don't you tell the people what we were talking about?
All right. Well, much to Trisha's extensive delight, woo! I am finally listening to Role Playing by Kathy Yardley. I had the ebook as a Prime First or whatever, First Reads, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it went on sale on audio for like a few dollars. If you already had the ebook. So I did that and finally sat down to listen to it because why not? And it is everything that you said it was and more, Trisha.
Oh, I love it so much. I put in our show notes that I want to spend the next 45 minutes talking about this, but obviously we can't. But I'm glad so far so good. Jess?
So far, so good. For those of you who might be listening to the podcast for the first time and are like, welcome. What the heck is role playing?
Welcome,
first of all. And second, this is a novel featuring two older characters who are both into video games. And they end up in a local computer game guild. And they're both around 50. She thinks he's like in his early 20s and he thinks she's like octogenarian.
Yeah.
So they like develop a rapport, but they're like, but this person is not in my age group, and therefore we can't really have more than a friendship. So that's the setup for this story. It's so great. I am loving it so much.
How far are you so far?
I just listened to a very crucial moment on the way home today. Aww. And it involves pho.
Okay.
Trisha knows what I'm talking about.
Sure do.
Those of you who have not yet read it, you will know what I'm talking about when you get there.
Yes, indeed you will. Oh, I'm so happy. We may just have to, like, just as a gift to ourselves, because we've now, as discussed before the show, been doing this for, I think, like 6 years. And delightful every single time, even when I am concerned that my hotel Wi-Fi is going to give out. As a gift to ourselves, it's going to be fine. It's going great. We may have to just like spend a segment sometime talking about role playing because I love it so much. Maybe it'll be our book club book.
Maybe. Let's talk about that.
Yes, we will get to our book club book in just a minute. I have to say, unlike the many times where I tell Jess I'm super excited about a book she recommends, which is always true, but then I get distracted by something shiny on my e-reader and don't actually read it. Unlike that, I actually did read one of the books that you talked about having, I think, missed out on last year, Jess, which is Fly With Me by Andy Burke. Mm-hmm. It is, as promised and as discussed last episode, a book where a nurse who is terrified of flying gets on a plane, can't take her anti-anxiety medicine, and then someone has a medical emergency, which, as I mentioned last time, I am obsessed with. Mm-hmm. This nurse is actually able to help this person. Olive is the name of the nurse. And she, you know, kind of gets, she becomes like internet famous. She's like a social media everything. And so she happens to need a ride to a certain place. And the co-pilot of the plane, who is Stella, takes her there. They hit it off and they decide to do this fake relationship for a couple of like bananas reasons. It is a book that is really heavy in a lot of ways because Olive is dealing with a serious family situation. Stella's father is dealing with a serious medical issue. But it is fun and lovely and fake dating and greatness. And I think between when we recorded our last episode and when it actually went live, I had finished this book and it was a delight. So as Jess anticipated in our last episode, Fly With Me by Andy Burke is wonderful. I also realized after we finished recording, somehow we didn't talk about two of my favorite books that I'm so I haven't actually read them. Two books that I assume will be my favorites in 2024. I'm just going to mention them like by name because we have so much to get to in this episode. But somehow we didn't mention Megan by Rebecca Weatherspoon. Is like, if you read Rafe, if you read Zenny, this is the third book that is part of that world. We have been waiting for it for like 5 years.
Oh, a while.
It's been a minute. And so, again, no author ever owes us anything. But we're super excited. It is coming, I think, February 14th. So get excited, everybody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other one that I completely missed that I think was actually my most anticipated book of 2022 was a book called Girls with Bad Reputations by Zoe Axelrod, which the girl stars in her eyes was like my favorite book of 2021. This book was supposed to come out in 2022. It kept getting bumped. I was starting to think it was never going to happen, but it is coming. It is coming. I don't remember when. I'll put the release date in the show notes so that everybody has it. But again, I guess I'm just really excited about books in 2024, Jess.
Yeah, it's going to be a great year. Also, the cover to that Zoe Axelrod book is fantastic. That hair is just marvelous.
So good.
So good. Anyway.
It's going to be so good. It's going to be a great year. Great year for books, great year for everything. All right, why don't you talk a little bit about Read Harder and then we'll take a quick break.
All right. So 2024 is the 10th year of the Read Harder Challenge. Join us as we make our way through the 24 tasks that are meant to expand our reading horizons and diversify our TBRs. To get book recommendations for each task, you have to sign up for the Read Harder newsletter. We'll also keep you informed there about other cool reading challenges, readathons, and more across the bookish internet. If you become a paid subscriber, you get even more recommendations plus community features where you can connect with a community of passionate, like-minded readers in a cozy and supportive corner of the internet. So check out the Read Harder newsletter.
Hooray. Okay. As discussed, we have a lot to get into, starting with our book club. We're going to take a quick break and then we will jump in. All right, Jess, first book club of 2024.
Woo woo.
How are you feeling about it?
I think I am happy to talk about this book. I'm excited to hear from you and to talk about some of the things that a couple people wrote in about, and to just talk about this book.
I am too. Do you want to tell people what it was and what the, do you want to give a quick synopsis? I'm putting you on the spot a little bit.
So we read The Princess and the Grilled Cheese Sandwich by Daya Moniz. And as Trisha has said multiple times, if you know how to pronounce the author's name and it's not what we're saying, please let us know, because we want to do it right.
We do.
And this is a sort of squishy fantasy graphic novel. It's not really fantasy when you look at it, but it is set in a world that is not ours. Mm-hmm. For one thing, everything is named after cheese.
Yes, it's a delight.
The titular princess's name is Brie, which isn't quite as inventive as some of the other names and places in The Princess and the Grilled Cheese Sandwich, but we'll get to that in a minute. So the actual central character, really, is Camembert, who is a woman, but when her father is looking towards the future, he tells her, "I'm not long for this world. When I die, move to the city or move somewhere far away and take up the mantle of Lord Camembert so that you can inherit everything, because in this society, women cannot inherit, not even a princess." So, yeah. So she does just that. We jump to the future where she is living with her friend and servant, and trying to just sort of live a quiet life, but she can't. She can't live a quiet life, and ends up attending the princess's no fur ball wearing faux fur, in part to get the princess's attention.
In part / mostly.
Mostly. And there are hard eyes all around, and Cam and the princess become friends. And sort of Cam gets pulled into this wild group of cheese names, and they become really close, all of them. Mm-hmm. Even the curmudgeon black cat one, who just wants to make her clothes and hide away. Mm-hmm. And as Cam and Brie spend more time together, they come to like each other even more. The hard eyes grow larger, the wistful sighs and oblivious walking away continues, and then all sort of drops when the truth comes to light.
Yeah, it gets complicated.
It gets complicated. Yeah.
And
it's complicated.
I think one of the pieces of, so I think that was a fantastic recap. Thank you, Jess. Yeah, some of the supporting characters that you need to know about are Ricotta, who is a friend of Princess Bri, Gorgonzola, who is a friend slash designer, also friends of Princess Bri, and then Feta, who is sort of the lady's maid for Cam, who... I will be honest, like most of this book, I thought they were roughly the same age. And then there's a moment towards, I don't know, the middle or something where Cam talks about how Feta used to change her diapers. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, they are not the same age. Because I thought there might be like a love triangle there. There wasn't. I was wrong. I was wrong. And I feel like, I really liked this book. I do think we heard from some folks who had some like legitimate sort of thoughts and concerns and criticisms. But I'm curious, Jess, as to what your initial takeaway was.
I enjoyed myself immensely. And I will say I had been having a lot of trouble reading anything. Mm-hmm. And I sat down and I just read this straight through. It was the first time in days that I had managed to soak in words and have an emotion about them. So mm-hmm. that might have influenced how much I enjoyed myself, but I just thought, you know, it was really fun and very sweet, and I enjoyed a lot of the mashup that was happening with sort of messing with time and place and time period and fashion and all of this other stuff that was happening there. If the art hadn't been quite so glorious, I'm not sure if I would have taken to it as well, but it's just such a beautiful little book.
Yeah. The art was stunning. And I think I want to get back to the sort of out of time thing you talked about. But first, I will say, I think you and I agreed, and everyone we heard from agreed, that the art was such a critical and pivotal part of mm-hmm. the book. I will say, this is going to sound like a tangent, but stick with me. When okay. I was, I don't know, 20 years ago or whenever it came out, I used to watch Project Runway with my friends, and I used to think like, yes, I can appreciate this. I can understand it because I can see the art and it looks fantastic. And then they started watching, I don't know, whatever, Top Chef or some kind of cooking thing. And I was like, no, I can't eat that. I can't mm-hmm. taste it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So like the fashion was the thing that I could understand and appreciate for everything it was supposed to be. Whereas whatever the cooking thing was, I was like, I can't eat that. It's not the same. And mm-hmm. so I do think it was really interesting, given that this was our first graphic novel and the first book that we've done in that format. I do think that given what an important role fashion and the creativity and the art behind it plays in this book, I don't think you could have done that in prose.
No, I could not think of the closest thing that I could imagine it being to in prose is something like that time I got drunk and saved a dragon. Like, just the way that it's sort of like, oh god, there is a Bri in that too. but and her family are cheesemongers. But the way that it sort of plays irreverently with the genre. Mm-hmm. But the actual series of events that happens and the things that we see, like, I cannot imagine going through all of this description in prose, because there would have to be so much visual description, because so much of what's going on is in action, not words. And that's one of the things that is great about graphic novels, because you have a whole different way of telling the story.
Yeah. And I think so. We heard, like I said, from folks that were super into the art. I do want to point out, someone we heard from, Morgan, pointed out that in addition to Diamunis, who did the script and the words and art, there were a separate inker and color in this colorist on this who were thanked in the acknowledgments, and that's Dominic Bustamante and Eleonora Brunei. They are thanked in the acknowledgments, like I mentioned. So special shout out to those folks as well, because I think mm-hmm. It does take it. It's so bonkers to me. Anytime I'm like citing a graphic novel or a comic or something, the number of people that have to come together to tell that story. Like, I think I tend to think of writing it as of being an author and storytelling in book form as being such a kind of solo venture. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this is a case where that's not really true.
Yeah, so. It can't be.
Yeah. So, okay, we're both very on board with the art. Interestingly enough, we heard very opposing opinions about how this kind of like out of time, when was this happening? Like Morgan, who I already mentioned, mentioned that they had trouble placing the time period because it feels historical. And then the maid, Feta, is playing a Nintendo Switch. Mm-hmm. So that's complicated. But then we heard from Cherith, who was like, I really liked that she was playing a Nintendo Switch. The Nintendo Switch is clearly a very big touch point of this book.
Yeah.
I didn't zero in on it too much. It didn't really, I don't know, it didn't really push my opinion one way or another. How about you? Did you, I mean, it sounds like you were actually kind of into it.
I was. Like, I think, you know, there are other elements to things that were going on that felt sort of contemporary, which maybe contributed to my my enjoyment of other little contemporary bits. Like, I did have a little bit of frustration initially, like, okay, what time period is this?
Yeah, what are we doing?
What are we doing? Is this historical? Is this fantastical? Like, is this now? Is this then? Whatever. Mm-hmm. But just the attention to detail that something like that requires. It's like, actually, I'm just going to sit under my pile of stuff while I'm sad and play Nintendo. Like, that is, yeah. Or, and then there's a pile of letters, like, right? There's no texting there, but there's brunch and there's, you know, all kinds of weird kind of, what's the word? Contradictory feelings to it, but it's not overwhelmingly contradictory. It's just kind of like a little touch here and there. Mm-hmm. I think if it had been more than that, I might have been like, this is too much.
Yeah.
My brain can't take it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. I'm interested too. So I think, like I said, it didn't really connect with me. I didn't mention this early on, but I had the same experience you did where I sat and read this in the morning. I think you and I were texting and I was like, ugh, I haven't read the book yet. And you were like, yeah, I haven't either. And then 3 hours later, I had read the book. So it was a quick and delightful and lovely way to spend a few hours. Mm-hmm. I'm super glad to have read it. I'm actually very glad to own it. I bought it at a bookstore near me. And I think we heard from a number of folks who are happy to have an excuse to read it, kind of, you know, that they'd seen it around or whatever and wanted to go after it. So I'm glad we did that. One of the things, it's funny because when I was putting some thoughts on the agenda earlier, the two things that really jumped out at me were the art and the supporting characters. And I then later read an email from Morgan who was like, the things I liked were the art and the supporting characters. So I thought that, like, we've talked a little bit about Feta, who is the lady's maid, who was just very concerned the whole time that Cam was going to get caught and that both of their lives were going to sort of be ruined by this because Cam couldn't have inherited if she was not presenting as male. I also thought Ricotta, who is like the friend who kind of doesn't get it, doesn't really know what's going on, but is just like rooting so hard for Cam and Bree. I thought she was very charming. But I think the one that I sort of connected with the most was Zola. It was Gorgonzola, who is the designer, who comes across as a little bit, I don't want to say cold, but sort of like standoffish or something. And then as the book develops, she felt to me like one of the most dynamic characters because as the book develops, you realize she has actually figured out what's going on, but she was in a very, very unhappy marriage to someone who was much older than she was, who she had only been able to start the design house that she created because she was doing the, she was doing all the work and he was taking all the credit. It was his quote unquote design house. But she was doing all of it. And then when he died, she was able to then kind of step in and start taking some of the credit and understand, you know, people started to understand what her role actually was. And so I just thought her perspective was so interesting in terms of kind of understanding why Cam did what she did and not really placing any judgment on it and just kind of getting it and not really feeling like the way that this had happened should be a barrier to Cam and Bree being happy. And I don't know, she's just the character that stuck out to me the most that I think the most about now.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole thing about her not quite similar but similar experience really, really sort of made a turn for making the story a little more settled into itself too, which I really liked. It's funny because you were talking about Ricotta and Zola, and I mentioned earlier that Zola was like the black cat, and thinking about it, we do have the golden retriever and the black cat friends.
Yes. Oh, that's so true. Yes.
Someone will die of fun. They are that you need both of those dynamics in a great group of friends. And it's cool that they're both kind of built out with their strengths. Like Ricotta's strength is being like super go hard, ride or die for both of them, even if she is clueless.
Yep.
And you know, she's there, like there's the part where she stayed longer with Bree when she was supposed to leave earlier because Bree was feeling like so nervous, and even a little thing like that really shows like how much of a friend both of these people are to both Bree and Cam. And I thought that the, like, while the love story is very cute, like the friendship between all four of them was like a huge element of the story that I wouldn't have enjoyed without it.
I know I totally agree. I think it's interesting because if you read sort of the afterword and some of the background of this book, you learn that this book was inspired by the author and their spouse, and which is like incredibly charming and lovely, and I very much encourage people to read that story. But I don't know if I would have been as compelled by it without sort of those additional characters. So I think they were really smart to add in like a little bit of dimension through these other folks. And I feel like one other thing that I do want to touch on before we wrap this conversation up, and I'm interested in what else you want to say about it too, but we heard some kind of differentiating things too about the ending. We heard some folks say that it kind of like wrapped up too quickly and too easily, like for a story in which the stakes are so high, like Cam really can't get caught because she could get put in jail and have all of her money taken away. And like, there's a lot going on there. And then to sort of have a situation, spoiler alert, I guess, where Bree knows and kind of picks her anyway. It did happen fairly quickly. It happened in kind of a fairy tale, happy ever after way. Like, one of the things that lives rent-free in my brain is the way that the Sultan at the end of Aladdin is basically just like, well, I've just decided to change this law that drove the entire plot of the movie. And he's just like, am I Sultan or am I Sultan? I'm like, yeah, but you were Sultan 82 minutes ago. You could have done this. Like, your child was kidnapped and whatever. Okay, again. Same episode where we discuss role playing, we're going to have a real conversation about the problems, which are many, with Aladdin. Anyway.
Oh, man.
Anyway. So I'm back on track, back on the main road now. Talk to me. So I do feel like there is, you know, I'm not quite like Ex Deus Machina, but like there's a little bit of, it does get wrapped up a little quickly, right? And mm-hmm. for a book, again, where the stakes are so high the whole time, it is a little unclear how the stakes suddenly were not so high. I'll be honest, it didn't really bother me as I was reading it because I was just very wrapped up in it. But when people pointed it out, I noticed it also.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, things end quickly, and there's a lovely montage of a few pages where, like, stuff gets done. Like, there are policies being challenged, there are protests happening, there are things being actively attempted at change. And
yeah,
that is great for what is a very narrow book. I think if the story itself had been broader, I would have felt a little worse about how things did wrap up so quickly, because yes, they wrapped up real fast.
Yeah.
And that happy ending, spoiler alert, is that a spoiler? That happy ending happened, and it just went.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, definitely wrapped up a little too quickly. But if you take it in context of how quickly the whole thing moved,
yes, yeah,
I think it meets it beat for beat.
Yeah. And I do think that's a thing that happens a fair amount in romance. I think in this one, it felt more quickly, just kind of from the format of it. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, yeah, actually not even our first book club book. I feel like the Selena Montgomery book that we read also was like a page and a half of happy.
Yeah, that ending was yes. like they got together on the last. I was.
Yeah.
We're mm-hmm. done. It's yeah. gone. It happened. Yeah. It's over.
Yeah. yeah. That's the thing, folks. If you thought this book wrapped up quickly, maybe revisit last year's book from this time period. But anyway, and I know, too, one of the things that you mentioned in the show notes was that you all of a sudden were pro grilled cheese, Jess.
I really wanted a grilled cheese. Like, the way there is a particular scene where Feta is making a grilled cheese, and for some reason that was, even though there had been grilled cheeses before, there's a grilled mm-hmm. cheese with gooey pull apart cheese on the cover.
Yeah.
That was what really made, I wanted to go in my kitchen and stand over the oven or yeah. stand over the stove and make a grilled cheese, which is not something I have done for several years, because I am both gluten and lactose intolerant.
Yep.
But I wanted a grilled cheese.
If anybody knows a grilled cheese sandwich in the Tucson area that is both lactose and gluten free, let Jess know. Oh. She deserves it. She deserves it. Yeah. No, it's true. It was good because, like, not only were all, like, there were character names and place names, and all of them were like very cheese oriented. And I feel like one of them, well, Camembert, of course, but like, there was like one that was like blue cheese sort of related. And I was like, oh man, gosh, I do love a blue cheese crumble. and like you said, there are multiple grilled cheese sightings, and they play like a pretty important role in the book. So, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I get it. I totally get it. Anything else that you would like to say about The Princess and the Grilled Cheese Sandwich before we take a break?
I think if you still haven't read it, and this conversation has made you go, huh, maybe, just go to your library, go to a bookstore, pick it up, have a look through. I think once you start, you can't really stop. It's mm-hmm. it's like the pages, they just turn themselves.
Yeah.
It's And especially if you need a smile. And goodness knows, we need a smile.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that the overall thing is a delightful little piece of literature. And there are definitely going to be things that people enjoy less and enjoy more. But I think it'll balance itself out for most readers.
I think that is 100% right. Okay. Let us know if you have not let us know yet what you thought of this book. Please do let us know. And yeah, we'll take a break and then jump back in. All right. So one of the things that this read inspired, and I know we do actually still have a couple of pending emails that we haven't talked about yet, but we wanted to connect our book Rex this week to the book club book. And so we are going to ask those of you who have sent us some emails to be patient just for a little while longer. Because we wanted to discuss one of the things that it felt like it might be a good fit for this book, given how long Lady Cam is sort of presenting a different identity than she might actually be living and experiencing. We wanted to talk also about other books where someone is either doing that purposely or there is a misunderstanding and there's a mistaken identity and no one's quite sure and maybe somebody's not quite as honest as they should be about it once they realize that the mistaken identity is happening. anyway, I think we're taking kind of a broad perspective on this one, but Jess, you had some books right away that you were like, this one, I'm ready. Let's do it.
Yeah, and it's funny. We didn't talk a whole lot about that in the previous segment where it's we were true. Talking about it. But I personally have to really be invested in a story to like latch on to something where someone is like thoroughly deceiving the other person who mm-hmm. is going to be at the end of the story, the happy couple or whatever. So it has to be a heck of a book to keep me interested, to keep me invested, and to like make me actually want them to be together by the end. Because, you know, sometimes you're just like, nope, don't want it.
Yeah.
but I have a few that even with, you know, some elements, something about how the story plays out made it more acceptable to me. And the first one is The Wolf and the Wildflower by Stacey Reed, which actually is more like The Princess and the Grilled Cheese Sandwich than like full out deception, because due to his living in the Yukon for several years alone.
Sure.
The mailman character, James, knows immediately that Jules is a woman. So let me step back. Jules, when she was born, was mistaken for a boy by her father. Mm-hmm. And her mother, horrified of potentially having to go through childbirth again, goes along with it and raises Jules as a boy. And now Jules is an adult woman, still masquerading as a man. She's been able to go to college. She was able to have the finest tutors, but of course she couldn't go to like Eton.
Sure.
because that would have caused some issues. And she's educated. She is ready to take on as successor to her father when he decides to retire from his psychology, whichever what, I can't remember.
Yeah.
So she is masquerading as a man. And as I mentioned, James spent 10 years lost in the Yukon and has finally been rescued and brought back home to England. And her father has been invited to help figure out why he's not acting like a proper gentleman. So when they meet, because of his heightened sense of smell, James immediately latches on to Jules not being a man. I'm not going into how realistic that is. This is a Regency romance novel, or a Victorian romance. But I think because he already knows, the fact that she continues to masquerade as a man doesn't feel as weird to me as they continue, as they pursue a, you know, clandestine courtship, etc. So that's the setup for The Wolf and the Wildflower. The actual plot has a lot more going for it. You can read the description on Goodreads or something. I've talked about this book enough. I thought it was actually really good and really well written, which is why I'm recommending it to you, even though there's some weird stuff about the smell of a woman. Once you get over that little hurdle, it's it's a fantastically written book, and the characters are both really interesting. The way that it's resolved is great. Like, yeah, so yeah. The Wolf and the Wildflower by Stacey Reed.
All right. I mean, I feel like the wolf is in the title, so the smell of a woman thing isn't that weird. You know? It is what it is.
It is what it is.
I'm going to talk quickly about a book that we have talked about before, but not for a while, because it came out about 6 years ago. And so this is a series that I think we haven't talked about at least for several months, if not couple of years. So the book is A Princess in Theory. It's by Alyssa Cole. It is about a woman, Letty, who's in grad school. She's working like multiple jobs. Things are very stressful. And she keeps getting emails saying that she is engaged to an African prince, which sounds ridiculous. You know, like there's all of that. She assumes it's a scam, whatever, keeps deleting them. Until that prince actually comes to, I believe it's New York, to track her down, because they are betrothed, and she accidentally mistakes him for someone who works, I believe, in catering at an event where she's working. And so she thinks he's a caterer. He kind of starts playing along. Eventually, it becomes clear that he is actually the prince that has been stalking her, frankly. But for a while, there's this mistaken thing where she thinks he's a caterer. He doesn't quite know how to explain that he is actually the heir to the throne of Thessalo. So there's a lot going on there. So the eventually, again, it does become clear. But for a while where they are trying to, you know, just get to know each other, there is this kind of elephant in the room that he knows about and she doesn't. So he does eventually have to come clean. But in the meantime, it is very fun to watch her, like, boss him around at the catering job that he is very bad at because he is a prince. And also, I think this was just a good opportunity to remind people that the Reluctant Royal series is an absolute delight. The last book came out in, like, 2019. So it's been a few years since this. There's a sort of spinoff series, but if you haven't got, if you're a little bit newer to romance and haven't gotten to Alyssa Cole's Reluctant Royal series, start with A Princess in Theory, and within, I would guess, a month, you will have read all three full-length books and both novellas. So just jump all in.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got?
One I'll do relatively quickly because the it's pretty straightforward bit of mistaken identity is One Night in Hartswood by Emma Denny. And this is a pretty new book. I actually, it came across my radar when it released with Mills and Boone in the UK, but it has a newer, publication here, that so it's only been out for maybe a month or two. And this is a medieval historical. It's set in the 14th century. And you have one character who is escorting his sister to be married to the son of an English lord. They're both pretty high up in the English food chain, as it were. One of their families has like a long line, and one of them is wealthy but new money in the medieval way. I don't know.
Sure.
So there is his sister, who is reluctant but willing, because you have to be, is getting married. So they arrive at the keep where Cecily is supposed to be meeting her future husband in on the next day when they get married. But in the meantime, William, who likes to be called Pen,
Sure.
is just wants to get out of his home and goes off into the forest and runs into Raff, who is Cecily's brother. And they sort of hit it off, just hanging out in the woods together in the evening. But Raff thinks Pen is a servant. And since he introduces himself as Pen, not William, he thinks he's a different person. So when Pen goes back to his room after spending this amazing night with Raff and is like, "You know what? I don't want to get married," and runs away. Raff, who is a tracker, is asked to help find him. So when he comes across Penn trying to build a terrible fire, he's like, "Were you sent to find William too?" And he's like, "Something like that." And so he's like, "I gotta say, this guy is probably dead. He's been missing for 2 days." And Penn is like, "So are you going to leave? 'Cause can I come with you?" So they go off on their merry way, and it's a lot about like Penn trying to sort of figure out who he is, and also like get to know Raff, and they on the road, and once they reach their destination, develop this like really soft relationship that is really darling but also dangerous.
Sure.
And then they figure it out because it's a romance novel. But this is also one where I was like, when is he going to tell him? When is he going to tell him? When is he going to tell him? Because that kind of is a very important element to everything else that's happening. Like, you're the guy who was supposed to marry my sister and you ran away. So yeah, that's One Night in Hartswood, and it's pretty light on the medieval elements of it. Like, everything is there for you to understand the time period, but you're not going to go like seeking out the correct dates for the sacking of York or something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a different pace than all of the Regencies.
I mean, that's a real relief because I don't really want to know when the sacking of York was. That's just like a lot of pressure. I will mention a couple really quickly. So The Neighbor Favor by Christina Forrest was one of the books that we've talked about recently because it was one of my favorites of last year. But we hadn't talked about it quite in this lens. So as a reminder, this is a book where a woman named Lily has been, she's trying to pursue this career in the book industry. She actually starts having a long-term correspondence with her favorite author, who is the author of this sort of like very like niche fantasy book that not that many people know about. And over the course of like a year, they build this really interesting relationship. I mean, again, it's all over emails. I love an epistolary book, and even ones that are just like partially epistolary, I'm super into. And then he totally ghosts her. She doesn't know why. She never hears from her again, but because they had built this sort of intimacy over email, where they're both talking about their families and their stresses and their worries and the things they care about, she's really hurt by it. And of course, because it's a romance novel, it just happens to be the case that when he moves to New York, he happens to live like next door to her, essentially. And he, Nick, who is the author, realizes before she does that he is the author, that she is the person that has been emailing him as the author of this fantasy book. And so he knows, it's a little bit like of a You Got Mail situation where Tom Hanks knows, but Meg Ryan doesn't. And he's falling in love with her and she's falling in love with him and he doesn't know how to tell her. And it's a kind of situation where you're sort of like, oh my gosh, just tell her. It's not that big of a deal. It's fine. The stakes are. But then when you get wrapped up in the emotion of it, you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know. Maybe don't tell her. What's going to happen? Well, I don't know. So it's a book where someone's not necessarily trying to be in disguise or have like a mistaken identity, but it sort of happens and they just kind of continue to let it go. So that's A Neighbor Favor by Christina Forrest. And then I will mention very, very quickly Kiss the Girl by Zoraida Cordova, which I have just started. It's the third book in the Meant to Be series, but they can all be read independently. It's these three books that are, you know, based on Disney fairy tales. This one is kind of very loosely based on The Little Mermaid. So Ariel DeMar is one of a group of seven sisters who have been spent like 15 years being this like pop band that is world, like these people are like Taylor Swift, Beyonce level famous. It's a really big deal, but they, all seven of the sisters, decide that they need a break. They gotta do something else, walk away for a while. And then she is actually supposed to start a solo career, but she meets Eric, which, if you recall Little Mermaid, you may remember the princess named Eric, who is part of his own band. Like, she and her, one of her sisters go to this, you know, kind of, you know, random show, and they go, and because she is not wearing her wig or all of her sparkles or all of her makeup, he doesn't recognize her. And so he wants her to go on the road with them. And again, I'm very early into this book, but I believe that she does. And he doesn't know that she is like one of the biggest pop stars in the world, which again sounds bananas, but she actually looks very different. And so I, as I said, I had hoped to be a little further along in this one before talking about it, but I trust Zoraida Cordova so much, who wrote, has written romance before under the name Zoe Castile. So I think it's going to be great. I can't, you know, make any promises, but so far it's very charming. It's a little bit, again, a little bit based on Little Mermaid. You'll see some of the Easter eggs if you know that story, but not too much if you are not into that book or movie, I guess. So anyway, I will have plenty of time tomorrow to finish Kiss the Girl. So I'll keep you all posted.
Well, the last one that I want to talk about is the third book in a series. But it can be, it can stand alone as long as you're cool with, you know, knowing that the couples from the first two books are couples.
Sure.
And it's The Marquis Makes His Move by Diana Quincy. It's, like I said, it's the third book in a series, and it's about a Marquis who masquerades as a footman in a household in order to gain access to the person who he's trying to seek revenge upon's private spaces. So it's just like, oh, yeah. Baby, what is you doing? and so he goes as, and is a footman in this household, sleeps in the servants' quarters, does all the footman work, all of that, and starts to develop a rapport with the lady of the house, who he has been tasked with providing for her every need, but not in that way.
I mean, I know what you're thinking. I was going to say, her every need?
I know what you're thinking, but... Okay. Not just, you know, general servant things, bringing her food, that kind of thing, going on her with walks, etc. Sure. But, you know, they develop a rapport and eventually get a little closer than they should be. But Alex is still trying to find the proof that the The husband, who is a famous map maker, sort of screwed him out of a very specific piece of land on a map, which is going to be the official detailing of this space of land. What he doesn't know is that, similarly to Princess and the Grilled Cheese Sandwich, the husband is just the face of the company, and Rose, the wife, actually does all of the maps. Since he doesn't know that, he doesn't know that his real grief is with her, or grievance is with her.
Oh, yeah.
But they figure it out. There is also a really big twist in this story, so just keep an eye out for how it all is supposed to work out in the end. And I will say, all three of these books are incredibly readable. If you want to download them onto your e-reader before you head to the airport tomorrow, I think you would make it through the entire trilogy by the time you got home.
I mean, thank you. And that says just as much about what I'm dealing with in terms of travel as it does about the readability of all three of these books. That is so helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. I have discussed the second one in great detail before. That's the Viscount made me do it with the Bone Setter. So mm-hmm. It might just be my brain, but I really love these books.
I mean, that's really all I need to know. So I'm going to charge up my Amazon gift card and see what happens. Or actually, I will check with my library first.
There you go.
There it is.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much, Jess. I hope everyone out there will let us know, again, what you thought of The Princess and the Grilled Cheese Sandwich, but also what your favorite disguise/mistaken identity books are. It's not hard to find us. You can find us at whatinromance@bookriot.com. You can find me on Instagram or Blue Sky at Trisha Haley Brown. Jess, where are you at these days in 2024?
You can find me on Instagram at Jess_is_reading, on the thing formerly known as Twitter, and Blue Sky at Jess_is_reading, all one word, and on TikTok at Jess_is_reading. I think that's it. Yeah.
At least for now. also, I just realized that you recommended three historicals and I recommended three contemporaries.
Yeah.
We complement each other so well, even after all this time. huge, huge thanks to our wonderful and patient audio editor, Kaylin Brame. Please do rate and review the podcast. It helps other people find us, and maybe they're looking for us in 2024. Maybe they, too, are facing a 20-plus hour travel day. They need us, everybody. Help them out. Help us out. I think that may be it for today, Jess. Anything else you want to add?
I think that's it. If you haven't read Princess and the Grilled Cheese Sandwich yet, it's definitely worth picking up, as are the other six books that we talked about today. Trisha in particular, but everyone else, the happiest of reading in the near future.
Thank you so much. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.